Let's get out to the Band of Brothers hotline and talk to Jared Lloyd about this. Jared, what are your thoughts on conference expansion and Bronco Mendenhall's statement that in 3 years there will be another shift?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me. And what you're talking about as far as TV money is, that's been the driver the whole time, and it will continue to be the driver. And the interesting
It always has been that, right?
Yeah, it really has. The interesting thing to me is how long will this bubble continue to expand? Is it a bubble at all? Because the TV money has expanded exponentially over the last, what would you say, decade, maybe 15 years. It's really, I mean, we've gone from, you know, pretty solid sums that the teams were making or conferences were making to just some really astronomical figures. I mean, what was it, 15 years ago, getting in a BCS game and getting $10 million for that was like a phenomenal year. That made your whole budget. And now teams are looking at upwards of $25 million per year for these TV contracts. And that's an individual team. That's not a conference. And so the real big question is, how long does this, you know, how long do these astronomical funds continue flowing into college football? And, you know, it's a question that, you know, I don't know the answer to. I don't know if anybody knows the answer to, but everybody's got to be positioned and ready to make their grab, to get as much of that as they possibly can. And so, you know, it's one of these things where I don't know if anybody really knows precisely how everything is going to develop, because nobody knows precisely where the money is going to keep coming in and, you know, how it's going to continue to, continue to shape the landscape. And so, you know, a lot of things can happen. And as these contracts are due for renewal and, you know, there's bidding and all these different things, there's a lot of options, a lot of possibilities out there.
Oh, trust me, there's plenty of money out there. There's plenty of people that want to put money into college football. There are,
yes.
whether it's organized crime or venture capitalists, there are plenty of people that want to put money into college football. That is for certain.
The main money is coming from TV, and TV is going through an interesting time right now because of, you know, how, you know, the internet has changed television viewership, how, you know, systems like Netflix, how DVRs have changed television. You know, one of the things that makes sports so popular is people want to watch it live, so they're more likely to watch the commercials as opposed to, you know, watching your favorite show that you can get on Netflix, or, you know, you can DVR it and just skip the commercials. And, you know, commercials is where TV makes their money, and so that's where, you know, that's where TV is throwing their money. But, you know, with the streaming that's happening, with people cutting the cord and not paying for cable, not paying for, you know, satellite dishes like they used to, going purely over the internet. I mean, a lot of things out there that, you know, I don't know if anybody knows precisely where it's going to head.
No, I agree. Jared Lloyd from the Daily Herald on was here, Cougar Sports, ESPN 960. You know, I don't know if you've looked too far into this, but when those negotiations do begin for the Big Ten TV contracts, who do you foresee them going after? I think they're going to try to pick off an ACC team. Zach Hicken thinks that they're going to take a non-Power 5 team like Cincinnati and bring them in for the Ohio market. What are your thoughts? What's that?
And West Virginia.
He thinks West Virginia and Cincinnati. What are your thoughts on that?
I think a lot of it depends on, you know, you could see bidding wars. You could see teams getting, I mean, the big landscape shift was when the Pac-12, you know, really made that, you know, kind of bold move and tried to really poach everybody from, you know, from the Big 12. You know, at that point it was the, you know, the Big 12. And that move kind of set a whole bunch of things in motion. You know, so each individual school, particularly those with decent-sized markets, particularly those that can bring in the ratings, are going to have suitors and have some attention. And that's where BYU, to me, is an interesting case, because BYU does get very solid ratings across the board. ESPN's happy with what they're getting out of their contract with an independent BYU. And so I think BYU is still a factor in as far as ratings go, but they're not in a large market. You know, they're in a situation where geographically they don't mesh in with these types of things. But, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, Virginia or Votech, those teams, you know, those teams could be of interest. You know, it wasn't too long ago that the Big East was poaching, you know, the Florida schools. You know, the ACC was poaching the Big East for the Florida schools. And, you know, all of this just continues to happen. And so you could look at a Votech, looking at an option from, you know, okay, so here's what the Big Ten is offering. Here's what the ACC is offering. We got some choices. We can pit them against each other and see what they're going to give us, and, you know, see where, you know, I don't know if there's any going to be anything that, you know, I think the teams coming from outside the P5 schools have a lot less, you know, negotiating power, because what are they going to do? Okay, well, we're just going to not join. You know, you go after them, they're probably going to say yes. BYU, Notre Dame, although Notre Dame kind of already did, you know, with their ACC scheduling and all that, Notre Dame already kind of got into that. You know, there's very few teams that have the negotiating power to say, hey, we want to do it on our terms. And so it's very interesting, but I think each conference is going to be looking at what gives them the most, whether it's TV dollars, whether it's I think they look at competition, I think they look at natural rivalries, I think they look at all of these factors, but TV dollars probably still is the biggest deal. And so, you know, that's probably where you look, is who can put the most eyes on the television set.
Recently, Bronco has talked about a few other things that he needs to get wrapped up before this season starts. He mentioned that, you know, he's concerned about the defensive secondary. He's got some concerns maybe on the more so on the defensive side right now. But there is one position where he thinks that he has, in the past, maybe made some mistakes and failed with, and that is the offensive line. He wants to get at least three more offensive linemen that can contribute this year. Do you think that that's possible? Do you think that there will be three guys, whether it's, you know, true freshman or I don't know if there's a possibility that a JC dark horse comes into this mix? I know that they have been targeting a few guys this recruiting class. But what are your thoughts on adding three more guys that can add depth to this offensive line?
Well, I think it's an uphill battle, to be honest. I think they've got a solid core of pretty good guys, maybe 6-7 guys that I think are really, you know, they've got some experience. They've shown the capability to do very well. But just watching, you know, as much of spring ball as I did, that second unit was a step behind. There's just no way, you know, there's just no doubt about it. That second unit was a step behind the first unit and what they were doing at that point. And, you know, again, you don't know what they're going to do during the offseason. You don't know how they're going to come together in fall camp. But it just looked to me from watching those guys, you know, what they were giving up, what they were allowing to happen, they just need more seasoning. They need to develop a little bit more. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if you have one or two guys that are able to step in, but then you might have to turn to somebody that's maybe not as ready as everybody else, and that can be a weak link. You just don't know how it's all going to play out as far as that goes. So, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why you get it. You know, you move a guy like Jatarius Gully, who's a very, you know, a really good athlete. And maybe you try and look at him and see maybe, okay, now that he's had a spring, goes through the off-season stuff, you know, the player run stuff that they're doing, you know, until fall and then goes through fall, maybe he'll be ready to step in and help out. Maybe you can get some of the other guys, the young guys, to step in and be ready to go. But you need depth on that line, and you need guys that are able to be solid contributors. Open holes for the running game, protect the passer, you know, in the passing game. It's where the offense begins and ends. So, you know, very, very important for BYU to have guys ready to go there.
What effect will the Russell Tialavea hire have on getting, you know, recruits to commit? I know he's not a part of the recruiting personnel, but his job description is one that will leak over into that recruiting. What about also the chemistry between the alumni and the program? Do you like this hire of Russell Tialavea, and why?
Well, I really like it just because I think that, you know, it's giving an opportunity to, you know, a guy who's been around the program. You know, he's been there. He's doing, you know, he's been doing some different things for the program, and, you know, he's obviously committed to helping out. And, you know, what he's got right now is his title isn't one that's going to wow you, but it's one that he can move up the ranks through and, you know, start at this position and kind of see where it takes him. I don't think it's going to necessarily have a dramatic effect on recruiting or on the team or anything like that. I think what you said about, you know, the impact on alumni relations might be good, just in the sense that people realize, hey, Bronco does appreciate what, you know, his guys have done before, and, you know, wants to give them opportunities to continue to, you know, show, you know, to continue their careers in football whenever he can. And, you know, the opportunity there is a good one for Russell Tialavea. I think, you know, and I think he'll do a good job. But the immediate impact on the football team, I don't necessarily think that that's going to be, you know, a real dramatic thing, because most of what I expect him to do will be behind the scenes. And so, and I think he'll be fine at that. I just don't expect, you know, I don't expect him to have a dramatic, you know, to change the team by becoming the assistant director of operations. But I think it's really good for him. I think it's really good for the program.
Yeah, Jerry, I think it was really, really good move for Coach Mendenhall, like you said, to bring in a BYU guy, somebody that has proven himself, and that's, you know, all for BYU. It kind of looks like Coach Mendenhall, with his goals of, you know, trying to be in a P5 conference within the next 3 years, he's trying to shape up the program to be ran like a P5 school. Do you think that this move and maybe some other moves, like bringing in strength coach, you know, some additional resources, will help the appeal of getting to a P5 conference?
I don't think it can hurt. I think you've got to act like it's one of those things that's really, to me, a human nature thing, where when you act like you belong, people seem to treat you like you belong. It's interesting how it works. That's kind of how human nature is. And so, you know, I think that's what BYU is trying to do. They've done it as an independent. You know, they don't want to be lumped in as a non P5 school. They want to be BYU. You know, they've got a national championship. They've got a Heisman Trophy winner. You know, they've been very successful. They'll play anybody anywhere. You know, they want to be lumped into that group of the elites of college football. And I think that over the last probably 40 years, they've probably earned that. Now, before that, they weren't probably in the elite elite level. But over the last 4 years, they've shown the ability to have a periodic top 10 program, which is something that a lot of P5 schools, to be frank about it, haven't done. And so, you know, even though they're in the P5 league, there's a number of schools you could point to that haven't had nearly the success BYU's had. So they've got to act like they belong in the P5. And that means playing P5 teams. That means organizing their program with the same type of approach. You know, BYU has to have some of the resources committed to it. You know, they have to be able to, you know, they have to be good on and off the field, so that as these shifts come, they've positioned themselves to just everybody expecting them to be a part of it. That's where BYU needs to be.
Let's switch gears to BYU basketball. Jared Lloyd from the Daily Herald on with the Sierra Cougar Sports ESPN 960. We've been talking a lot of Frank Jackson lately. We had Brandon Gurney have an exclusive interview with the Jackson family yesterday, and he broke some news that the fact that Frank Jackson, the decision to decommit from BYU was one of the hardest things he's ever had to do in his life. And now we just heard that Maryland has offered. Coach K is texting him. U of A has officially offered. You know, his services are going to come at a premium. Where do you think he ends up? What do you think about Frank Jackson possibly ending up at BYU?
Well, it's an interesting situation for the entire Jackson family. And I've known them for a number of years. I've watched Frank grow up. Brandon and I both actually were in the same ward as the Jacksons for quite a long time, same LDS ward. And so we got to watch that family and got to know them really well. And they're really good people. I like them a lot. But this is a situation where you've got a young man with a lot of different options. And part of it has to be where, you know, there's a couple of factors that he really has to take into consideration. The first one is, what is his overall long-term goal? If he is looking to be a mission guy, that's one thing. If he's looking to be an NBA quick type guy, you know, in a couple of years, in 1 or 2 years, and then jump into the league, that's a different thing. You know, the Jabari Parker idea, you know, that type of approach. I'm not saying Frank Jackson's Jabari Parker, but I'm saying if that's what he wants, then he's got to look at different directions. He's got to look at teams that, you know, are going to fit his style of basketball, what he does, which is where one of the things that I think BYU does have an advantage. I think, you know, BYU's style matches what Frank does well, you know, in a lot of ways. So I think that BYU does have an edge maybe in that. But there's just so many factors that he's got to evaluate. And frankly, I don't blame him for decommitting at the point where he was at and investigating his options. I mean, he just finished his, you know, junior year. He's still developing, still growing as a player, drawing a lot of attention. You know, he's obviously very talented, very, very good. And so, you know, a decision without evaluating all of the factors might have been, might have been hasty and might have been something he looked back and wondered if he made the right choice. So I think it's the right thing for him and his family to kind of evaluate where they're at, what they want to do, and where they want to go with his basketball career and with his, you know, his life goals. And so to me, I think he's in the right place. I think it's a very, very tough choice. I think he's got a lot of options. I still wouldn't be surprised if he ends up coming to BYU, given his family, given what I know about them, and just the people they are. I wouldn't be surprised if that ends up. And plus, you know, there's the factor of playing with some of the guys he's played with at Lone Peak, and, you know, there's some things there that, might be attractive as well. But right now, I think it's all, I just think there's a lot of factors going into his decision. And, you know, I don't envy, you know, a young man trying to make that choice, because it's really hard to see as a 16, 17, 18-year-old, you know, what you want to be in 10 years sometimes, or even 5 years, or even 1 year. Sometimes it's hard to see what you're going to do next weekend. So, you know, I don't necessarily envy him the position. I think that it's a role that not a lot of people get to play. But I think he's doing the right thing in evaluating, you know, the different options.
Jared, I don't know if we've chatted with you too much about the Isaac Nielsen, what we want to call it, the bump out. He got bumped out on the basketball court.
Bumped out.
He got bumped. Well, because bump out, you know, is kind of a game. You know, playing the game. We're gonna have to ask you to leave. Did you get those TPS reports done? Sorry, mm-hmm. Isaac, you didn't get those done. We're gonna have to ask you to leave. Frank Bartley also transferring. What ace up Coach Rowe's sleeve is there going to be? What's the ace? I mean, what's gonna happen this offseason? Are we gonna see like a Sai Tuimala from Arizona State transfer? Are we going to see a JC Big come in and be able to play right away? Is there a freshman out there, a possible, you know, recruit that can come in as a freshman and make some noise? What's going on there?
Well, let's look at what Dave Rose had in the cupboard along with Isaac Nielsen. I mean, you bring in Corbin Cafuzzi, who wasn't necessarily in the plan, but, you know, there's something when
you got lucky
you've got
with that
guy,
one, huh?
Yeah, well, kind of, in a way. But there's something when you have a walk-on or a guy, you know, a football player that's playing pickup games and doing better than most of your big men, that is not a good sign for your big men. And, you know, I give all the credit in the world to Corbin. He's a very athletic young man. He's very, you know, he's got a lot of size. He's got a lot of athleticism. You know, he's still raw and still developing. And, you know, I like that, but there's something to be said if a guy like an Isaac Nielsen wasn't out playing, you know, a guy right off his mission, you know, a freshman who hasn't played basketball for a few years, and he wasn't out playing him in the pickup games, you know, that kind of just says something to me. So you've got Corbin Cafuzzi, who's obviously one guy that BYU brought in. You've got, you know, Kyle Davis, who a lot of people, you know, watching him at practice, myself included, think that he was probably BYU's best back-to-the-basket scorer. You know, and he was, you know, he had to sit out after transferring from Utah State. So he's there in the mix. You look at getting Nate Austin back. So there's another guy that's in the mix. You know, you look at maybe Jamal Eighth and what he might be able to do. You know, I'm not saying he's going to be Tina Young or anything. You know, he wasn't phenomenal at UNLV, but you know, if you're a BYU coach, you look at him and say, okay, here's a guy that, you know, maybe is another piece that we're working with. That's a bunch of guys already right there. And even having Luke Worthington go on a mission, you still don't, you know, you still only have a certain number of spots, certain number of scholarships, certain number of openings. And, you know, you're looking down the road at Eric Mika coming back. And, you know, where's Isaac Nielsen fit into all of this? Where does he get in? You know, is he a, you know, the third string center? Is he the, you know, third string power forward? You know, where's he at? And I think that's what the BYU program is. And I'm sure that they have a lot more detail than I'm looking at. I'm just looking at it from the surface. But you look at all of that, and it's like, you know, what's best for the program and what's best for the kid? And this happens all the time. And you guys know this. And, you know, it happens in basketball. I've had friends that have had to deal with it at, you know, in the women's ranks and in other sports where, you know, issues or scholarships or someone returning that wasn't planned on, you know, those type of things come up. And, you know, the openings just aren't there as was originally expected. And, you know, they have to find opportunities and, you know, do things differently sometimes because of it. So it's the nature of the game. It's the nature of what they're doing. And I wish them the best of luck. But, you know, what's best for Isaac might not have been to be on this team, even if BYU had decided to keep him around. He might do better going someplace else and having a chance to really develop as opposed to facing, you know, kind of this stockpile that BYU had.
Jared, anything you're working on that you can tease us, you know, anything you're excited about that you're working on?
Well, I just finished my story on Austin Collie and what he's been able to do at Cognitive FX, a clinic that does, you know, rehabilitation from injuries, like brain injuries, concussions. Really cool stuff, actually. That's up on CougarBlue.com already. And then, of course, this week we got the NFL draft, and there's some guys that are hoping to either be drafted late round or at least sign contracts and get some opportunities there. I was full for those guys, particularly the ones that, you know, kind of maybe don't get looked at in the draft. I love seeing them get those opportunities to go into a camp, show what they can do, and, you know, I always hope that, you know, some guys are going to stick, and, you know, you get a few that do, and that's the best when some of those guys go. So that's going to be fun. And of course, Saturday is the big rugby match, the championship. You know, Cal once again coming to town. BYU's beaten Cal twice in a row in the Varsity Cup championship, and you better believe Cal's not happy with it, because Cal's been the dominant rugby program for so long that, you know, I talked to Coach David Smith from the BYU program, and he's like, Cal's put in a lot of effort, you know, to make sure they're ready for this particular match. So I expect a really good contest up at Rio Tinto on Saturday.
No, I think it's going to be a huge contest. Both these teams, if you look at comparable games, common opponents, St. Mary's, I think what BYU won their match 32-28, and Cal was able to win, I think, 27-20. Both of those matches were very close. I can't wait. What are the keys to that match, in your opinion?
Well, BYU's got to be able to take care of, you know, one of the things that BYU's run into, and they played very well against good competition this year for the most part. Sometimes they hurt themselves, though. They don't take care of the ball like they should. You know, we talk about turnovers being costly in football. They are costly in rugby as well. It's not the same type of thing, but you got to take, particularly when you're going up against, you know, a really good team like a Cal, you can't give them a lot of opportunities, particularly in your own end. You know, you got to make sure you're taking care of that. You got to take care of things like the scrums and the lineouts. Those are a lot of times where, you know, I remember watching a couple of years ago when Cal beat BYU, Cal dominated the lineouts. And that's, you know, that's where they throw the ball in and get it back in play. And Cal was able to really take it to BYU, and that gave them a lot more opportunities. So you got to take care of the scrums and the lineouts. And, you know, I think both teams are physical. The both teams are talented. And I really think it's going to come down to you know, who gets the late break. I think it's going to be a really close game, and I think it'll come down to which team makes the play late in the game to get themselves the win. And that's what makes it fun in any sporting event. You know, you always love it when it comes down to, you know, somebody making a play late in the game to win a championship. Those are the best scenarios, and that's kind of what I'm expecting for Saturday.
Jared, we appreciate you coming on with us. As always, great insight, and I can't wait till you drop some more articles. Have an awesome day, brother.
Hey, thanks, guys.
There you have it, Jared Lloyd from the Daily Herald.